Hey, hope you guys are doing well. No, it's been a minute. I kind of just came back, and we're going to get back in the swing of things, being more consistent. I just had some stuff I needed to do, kind of thing. So before we get into the episode, definitely I'm trying not to do this as much as often, but join the Discord. Like and share with your friends, especially on decentralized platforms, not shitholes like Twitter that limit your reach if you say funny words. And not even that, just that. Educate yourself, take this, and then teach others. You know, that is the purpose of this podcast, where I get to be more less thinking and no really editing, besides like some like notes, kind of like a guideline. But I kind of want to like just reach to a mass of people that may not like video content and they just want to throw this in the background. But I want you also to educate other people that may not know where to go or start. We do have a Discord. You can pretty much find that in the show notes, or you can go to my YouTube channel, or not an FBI honeypot. No, it's blog.notanfbihoneypot.com, or just my YouTube channel, Not an FBI Honeypot. I'm also on the other decentralized platforms like Odyssey, etc. Now that we get that out of the way, and I'll try not to do that for a very long time again. So if you're listening to this, point people to this point so if they need to find all the socials, and I'll try to like just link them in the show notes. So, we're going to talk about something called a cold wallet, hardware wallet. And I think this matters. It matters because I think more people are getting into cryptocurrency. And I do believe that there is an overwhelming problem with the CBD, the centralized bank digital currencies that want to be pushed. Capital surveillance, where they are surveilling pretty much every transaction you do, is problematic. And if you live in a country where it's even more prevalent and more difficult, you know, RIP being British, apparently, digital IDs are probably coming to them. We have states now banning VPNs, banning, pornographic websites, which I disagree with. I think people should be able to have access, access to what they, access to what they feel is, you know, fit for them. And I think that people should just have access. I mean, I don't banning any type of media that isn't morally, you know, corrupt or in more of the case, like super illegal, like child sexual abuse material. But I think banning porn and VPNs is just a step into authoritarianism, and it's going to make it very difficult for people just to have access to that kind of content, because it will become a slippery slope, and then they'll start banning erotic books, and then now it's science books, and you know, then we live in fucking the worst timeline ever. But beyond that tangent, we're going to talk about cold wallets for a bit. If that is something that interests you, stick around. If it does not, skip ahead or just hop off. You know, don't know really how to say it in a nice way, because I think that this is going to be more of a technical kind of thing that people should know about, especially with people getting more into cryptocurrencies. I always hear crypto bros talking about XRP like a bunch of fucking retards. You're literally just buying something that can be easily traced. You have to then pay, you give your cut to the government. How do you tax it properly? Or you're just not going to pay taxes on it for years to come, and then get that letter and that visit from the our favorite three-letter agency, the IRS. Because you're a retard and you don't report it. And I think it's kind of like anti... Like, Bitcoin is kind of like a shit show now. I believe it's lost its main focus of being decentralized. And it's just used to line the pockets of, like, the ultra-wealthy. Which is, you know, we kind of live in a fucked, again, another fucked timeline. So, not really. This is something that people don't really talk about, I guess, when it comes to cryptocurrency. They only talk about centralized exchange, hot wallets, what can I use on my mobile phone. But the point is, Bitcoin started off essentially as cold, like as cold as you could be. There was, you pretty much had to use paper wallets or some form of half hot wallet, half not. Paper wallets have like a really long history. It's kind of cool. Monero has a website. Monero has a website that you can generate a paper wallet completely offline with no internet connection. It's kind of sick. I have done it on CubesOS. And I did it actually on... I did it on, I believe, Tails. So, pretty much Bitcoin paper wallets emerged in the early days of Bitcoin as a method of storing private keys offline to enhance security against online threats. The concept that became popular between 2011 and 2016, serving as a way to generate and print Bitcoin addresses along with corresponding private keys and physical paper, but they're creating a form of cold storage. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. We're gonna talk about what's cold wallet, cold storage, and I'm just gonna go over the definition, and then I'm gonna talk about some products, why it's important. But before we get there, you have to understand that this is I want to hang on to my cryptocurrencies and have digital sovereignty and kind of thought process. This isn't telling people to go out and buy a hardware wallet. This isn't going to be go buy this cryptocurrency and you're going to become a millionaire. This isn't financial advice. This is just something that I think people don't understand with the rise of scamming. You can't go to the IRS and be like, someone just stole $40,000 of my cum coin that I bought. They don't care. Like, good fuck. They're like, cool, it's a digital asset. Thanks for telling us. Now give us 30%. You know, any kind of type shit. So you quite literally, when you actually buy cryptocurrency, you are taking the responsibility of what the bank does for you. This is a huge responsibility. Never sharing your private keys. Not your keys, not your crypto. These are all terms that you have to understand. Your private key is essentially the key to your house that no one has a copy of and no one should have a copy of. If they have this key, they can enter your house and steal all your goods, and you can do nothing about it. People's wallets being siphoned directly out of them, storing their crypto on Coinbase like a fucking retard. Like, you quite literally do not have any... You are buying cryptocurrency and keeping on an exchange. You're just doing the banking system with extra steps with no protection. If that's the easiest way to understand it. But I digress. So pretty much we're just going to go over some terms right now. If you want to skip this, you're more than welcome to. I don't know where. We're going to explain what a blockchain actually is and isn't. And this is going to tie into like what Monero is, what it isn't. So a blockchain is a distributed ledger. In other words, a digital record shared across multiple computers and is the most commonly associated with cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, but blockchain applications can go beyond cryptocurrencies. It is decentralized in its nature. It's immutable. Immutable means that it refers to the inability for someone to be able to change it. They can't go in and change like your Bitcoin's worth. They can't change anything. Everything's kind of cemented. It's a decentralized finance movement. You have a ledger. The ledger acts as a shared database that provides every participant in the same update immutable record transaction. You have smart contracts, you have public key cryptography, you have the blockchain security relies on public key cryptography and private key, where each participant has two keys. The private key is the kept secret. You want to keep that like no one can see this, aka your seed phrase, and is used to sign transactions. A public key is shared with others to use to verify the transactions. These keys work together to unlock the data in the ledger. B2B transactions, who was involved, you know. And this is where it gets a little sus. I mean, a little fucked. Is Bitcoin's public ledger Bitcoin's public ledger is what makes it transparent. And that is a good and a bad thing. It is a good thing because you can't, it makes it immutable and somewhat fungible. It's like, hey, we know that this Bitcoin was sent to this address. We know it exists. It can't be fraudulent. There are some more complicated, deep thoughts about that, but that's essentially the gist of it. The easiest way to explain it is like, hey, everyone in the public ledger agreed and stamped and verified this transaction through these nodes and these validators, and they're like, hey, this is one Bitcoin sent from this address to this address. It's that simple. Essentially, after that's done, but everyone knows how much Bitcoin you have. They know how much you're worth, which is not good. Not a good thing. Like, the bank knows, the government can know, everyone kind of knows. Like, you're kind of like, hey, everything is known, but everything is known. Like, you know, it's pros and cons. If you get, you know, there's some things you can do with conjoins and, like, swapping wallets that have no KYC, but where'd it come from? It's not really fungible to, like, the extreme that, like, Cash or Monero actually is. Because they can trace... Bitcoin's very traceable. This is why it's, you know, there's an argument that Bitcoin was good in theory when there was less KYC exchanges, but most people are now buying it through KYC exchange. Now more people are buying it through know your customer exchanges, and so like you're kind of like defeating the pseudo anonymity that Bitcoin is kind of known for. Like they've traced back to wallets back to the first like set of couple of transactions. It's pretty easy now, like public blockchain analyzers, it's all known. So just imagine of having a camera on you 24/7 of every time you spend money. So all these people that bought Bitcoin at a cheap price might have a target on their back. They might have some problems in the future. The IRS might be at their doorstep, and it's now being, you know, now it's being pumped by whales. But I digress. Essentially, that's what a blockchain is. That's the premise of Bitcoin. That is the purpose of it. Is it creates an immutable currency that has some value, store value maybe. Not entirely sure. The store value is really that good, but it's decentralized. No one owns Bitcoin, and then pretty much it uses, I think, proof of work. It's like why you mine it. That gets more of into like what is Bitcoin, but that's not why we're here. We're here to talk about cold storage wallets. That's just a very slight glaze gloss over like what it is. Like Bitcoin has store value because it can be immutable. It's decentralized in its nature to a certain degree. I don't think it is anymore. That's my personal take. And it has a ledger that pretty much confirms everything. It's like a public ledger. There's some problems with that from a privacy standpoint, but you know. So wallets, you have different types of wallets. Pull up my notes. Let's go. Oh, here. So. Different types of wallets. Where is that? Okay. Oh, yeah. Right here. What is a cold wallet? Definition. So there's types of cold wallets. There's hardware wallets, offline software wallets, paper wallets, metal wallets, and sound wallets. Hardware wallets are a physical device specifically designed to store cryptocurrency private keys offline. They're the most popular cold storage option. Hardware wallets connect to a computer or a smartphone via USB, Bluetooth, and paired with a companion app to facilitate the blockchain transactions through these apps. They can sign transactions, which then are transmitted to the blockchain without exposing the private keys to any online threats. Some hardware wallets support multi-sig, which can further enhance the security of the business for a business use case. By the way, multi-sig is kind of cool, but it's out of scope of here. For added security, many modern hardware wallets are equipped with a camera that scans the QR codes, further reducing the risk of data compromise when connecting to a computer. This feature ensures that the private keys remain secure even when the device is with a USB connection. You can actually fully air gap it and prevent any form of data transmission. Offline software wallets pretty much are sometimes called air gapped wallets and are software programs that are installed on a computer that are never connected to the internet. They can be thought of as a DI approach. Hardware wallets require more technical expertise. They really don't. For the reasons they're only recommended for advanced users, they're really not. Creating an unsigned transaction on an online computer, transferring the transaction to the offline computer via QR code or USB, using the offline wallet to sign the transaction, moving the signed transaction back to the online computer via QR code, broadcasting the transaction to the blockchain. This method, while secure, can be time-consuming and impractical for frequent transactions. You shouldn't do frequent transactions anyways, just fucking whatever. Paper wallets are one of the simplest methods of storing cryptocurrency offline. This involves holding a physical document containing a private key written either in text form or printed on a QR code, which you can do, and you can laminate it and throw it in your safe. To create a paper wallet, the private key is generated offline through a hardware wallet or a computer with no internet connection written on the paper. The paper wallet comes with certain risks, are highly susceptible to physical damage, theft or loss, obviously. Unlike hardware wallets, paper wallets lack recovery option. If the paper is destroyed, access to the funds are permanently lost. Using a paper wallet to send cryptocurrency typically requires importing the private key into a software wallet, which temporarily exposes online risk. Because of the above limitation, paper wallets are generally considered an outdated form of cold storage. Many modern wallet generators are no longer recommended paper wallets due to the ease of making oopsies. Then you have the GigaChad metal wallets, also known as metal backups. They're more enhanced version of paper wallets and form a cold storage. It involves engraving a private key or seed phrase on a metal plate, assembling a pre-engraved components from the form of the backup. Compared to paper wallets, the metal wallet provides additional durability that resists the fire, water, general wear and tear. Commercial metal wallets range from stamped steel plates to individual metal plates, tiles that can be arranged to form like paper wallets. The private key or seed phrase should be generated in an offline environment to maintain security. Note, metal wallets are often just a seed phrase backup rather than a standalone wallet that can sign transactions. In other words, sound wallets are a less common form of cold storage. They involve encoding private keys as a sound file, which is stored on USB, CDs, vinyl record. The idea is to create a storage method that is less likely to be recognized and holding valuable information. Creating a sound wallet using specialized software to convert private keys into audio file. That sounds retarded. But that's pretty much the gist of it. Now, there is some hardware wallets that we're going to go over. We're not going to go over the software ones besides one, because there's a few, and this is where people get like kind of like confused, and I understand. Learn. Okay, so the first one we're going to talk about is going to be the Keystone. Pretty much the Keystone is a $150 hardware wallet. It's open source, which I like. You should always use open source, and it is completely air-gapped and offline. It has a built-in camera, fingerprint reader. The battery life, from what I read, was apparently terrible. Kind of something to think about, but that's really not a huge compromise, because you can just keep it plugged in, and if you only do a couple transactions a month, it doesn't really matter. So pretty much it helps you keep your seed phrase secure. Keeping your seed phrase secure with no one else, you can get it, write it down on the seed phrase sheet that comes with your product, put it in a safe place, and you can use the Keystone tablet, which is even tougher and keeps it safe from things like fire and rust. Create your seed phrase offline. It's safer to generate your seed phrase without an internet connection. This makes it harder for hackers to compromise your information. When you create the seed phrase using the Keystone, it's completely offline. Also, avoid importing an online seed phrase into the Keystone. This can be still exposed. Keystone Hardware wallet approach. For maximum security, only create your seed phrase using the Keystone Hardware wallet retained from importing online seeds. Think carefully, sign confidently. Keystone offers a unique feature that decodes the transaction details before you sign them. This way, you are fully aware of what you're approving. This helps you dodge potential phishing attacks. For instance, hackers might mimic your desired receiving address, but Keystone's feature reveals the true transaction details. Remember, your seed phrase is the foundation of your crypto security. Handle with the utmost care and make the most advanced security features. Pretty much, it is a very easy thing to do. You choose your language, device verification, firmware update, and it stores Monero. How does it store Monero? I'm going to tell you. So Feather Wallet is the only thing currently in 2025, October 12th, that it supports. There is an interest to bring Cake Wallet, and there is a roadmap for that. This also supports Bitcoin and Zcash. I'm going to focus on the Monero part, but if you are a Bitcoin bag holder, this might be your best option. There is also the Blockstream Jade Pro. They are roughly the same price, about $150. And I will go into the pros and cons later after I go over this, because there are pros and there is some considerable cons that I kind of agree with, but I kind of disagree. It's like a half-half. I agree to a certain extent, but then I disagree also. So Feather is a great software wallet that allows you to route everything through Tor. If you have something like Tails, you can actually use Feather Wallet on Tails, and everything will automatically and be known to route through Tor. This helps your privacy and your security. You should still run your own node in this operation, which is what I do. I use Umbral to run a Monero node. My Monero node is not routed through Tor. And I do all of my, because I do all of my transactioning, and I'm within always reach a proximity of my Monero node to make sure that I am maintaining the highest level of security and privacy. Seth for Privacy and a few other people out there have really good tutorials and guides on why you should run a full node. I think I even did an episode on it, something to think about. So you should still run a node even if you are doing a hardware wallet offline approach, because you're going to eventually get Monero and you're going to use it some places and you're not going to use it some places. Maybe you have two wallets, one that's online for small transactions, one that's offline. Is it like a savings? Like, think of this as more of like a bank and savings. And the bank and savings is just this highest. You're not touching this on a consistent basis. Maybe for larger purchases, maybe in the future, if you can buy Monero with a house with Monero, which would be sick. But Feather Wallet is really good. I like it. Huge fan of it. It's free and open source. Our favorite things. You prepare. You have to ensure that the Cypherpunk firmware 2.0.2 is on your Keystone 3 Pro. You download it, install it. You tap the icon to choose Feather. A QR code will appear. You essentially like select option, restore wallet from keys. Open the Feather Wallet section to restore wallet from keys, and you enter the wallet connection page. Then you click scan QR code and use the camera to scan the QR display on your Keystone. Make sure that you have a high, decent auto focus resolution camera to do this. Pick view only, because that's all you want. This is kind of like a view only wallet, and we're going to explain that in a minute. After scanning, enter the creation date of your wallet and then restore the height. Name the wallet, set password, and tap create open wallet to finish the setup. After connecting the wallet, wait for the wallet synchronization to complete. Once you've successfully bound your Keystone wallet with Feather Wallet, you can securely explore various features it offers. And you can force the connection through Tor, etc. There is a way to spend this too, though. So Keystone, for the ill-informed, Keystone is holding your cryptocurrency. This is why it's important to know your seed phrase and keep it in a very secure offline place that is has not even cameras around. Like, you want to treat this as if this is your social security. You don't want any form of connection online with this, and you want to keep it air gapped as possible. Write it down a couple times, put it in an if you're going to put it somewhere digitally, you better encrypt that drive with the highest level encryption that you can think of. And then there is a software called Superbacked that is meant for this. It's meant to split up your seed phrase into three different pieces of paper, and you only need two of them to recover the data. And then there's the Shamir backup scheme that's a little bit that's higher security and better for compromise. It's better for long term in case you become dead weight or you die or mysteriously disappear because you found some funny file on the internet that you shouldn't have had access to, shit like that. If you disappear, like, it can still be recovered and your family can prosper from all your online gambling. So that's the kind of the gist of it. But all the Monero that I send to my Keystone phrase, Keystone, in a hypothetical scenario, is non-spendable from the Keystone itself. It's offline. Well, you're like, well, bro, how do I do this then? How do I spend my sweet Monero on big titties and chicken from KFC or burrito from Chipotle? I'm glad you asked. So, say that you want to send Monero to somebody and you want to purchase something. There is a way to send it. On the wallet homepage, select send to enter the send page. Enter the amount and the recipient's address. So, you say it's $10 Monero and you enter their address. Verify the information and click send to proceed the transaction signing step. A QR code will be generated on Feather Wallet to verify the output. So it will pop up a QR code on your screen. You will then take the Keystone, you will pick the scan icon button on the right, and you will scan the code on Feather Wallet to confirm the transaction details and swipe to confirm. Keystone will generate a QR code for confirming. Return the Feather Wallet and click Next. Use the camera to scan the import key images, the QR code generated by Keystone page. Wait for Feather Wallet to generate the QR transaction. There we go. Signing the transaction. Feather Wallet will generate another QR code for signing. Tap the scan icon on the bottom right of your Keystone homepage. Scan the QR code on the... It says Helium Wallet, but I don't know why it says that. I think it's a typo. On the wallet, confirm the transaction details, slide swipe to confirm. Keystone will generate a QR code for confirming. Return to Feather Wallet, tap Next, and use your camera to scan the QR code, complete the transaction. That seems like a lot. That seems like a lot of work. Well, that's the point. Feather Wallet is kind of like the intermediator. And all this can be operated using your node and through Tor to increase the privacy and security and the anonymity of it. And I will eventually be doing a video on how to do this in real time with a small amount of Monero. Maybe I'll buy a burrito or something from Chipotle. But that is essentially what you have to do in order to maintain the highest level of security and privacy. This is done all while your private keys are never being exposed. You have to remember, if they have even access to your private keys, that's not good. That is a bad thing. You can restore your wallet from keys. And then that gets into like a whole different thing. This is why online centralized exchange are not good. They're not your keys. It's not your crypto. You don't own it. They do. They have your keys. No matter what any online service says, they own your keys. They own your crypto, and they will bend their knee to the law, and they will not protect you. Their only protection that they're going to have is the slight amount that they don't want to get hacked, but in reality, they are taking your security and putting it in their hands. The good thing about a hardware offline wallet like the Keystone or Jade, Blockstream Jade, is that it's offline. There is no need to connect to the internet for this. This is scanning QR codes. The only online person needs to be, really, is the view-only wallet. And that's all it can do. It can view. I can't send Monero without the permission of the Keystone wallet. The Keystone wallet's kind of like, I'm kind of like its bitch. It's like, hey, I don't want to sign this. I don't think I should send this. XYZ. And then this is kind of like how it works. It's pretty easy to understand once you do it. You don't have to understand this on a technical level. The only thing you have to understand is that you cannot spend this Monero with just by sending send. You have to sign and verify the transactions. That takes the trust. It becomes almost like I'm taking the trust. I have to do a lot of steps in order for this to work, which is a good thing. And then you have the kind of cheaper approach. If you don't want to spend, say, 200 dollars, 150, and say you have a phone with Graphene OS on it, and you already have Cupcake, there's an option. So Cupcake is the latest app in Cake Wallet family. This is designed by Cake Wallet. Monjaro, another Monero wallet, has their thing called Sidekick. It's in super beta, I believe. So you kind of have a couple options. I think hardware wallet is the best. This is a little cheaper, more convenient, and they claim it's more anonymous, but I mean, whatever. You can buy these Keystone wallets, put it, give a PO box, put a fake name on it, and purchase it and pick it up. You know what I mean? Or send it to a friend's house. Yeah, but you can pay with it in Monero. So all they're going to see is that it was sent to Kyle Dunderdick that lives in fucking Timbuktu, Chicago. You know what I mean? So like, even if there's like a hack for their rec and they're like, oh, look at all these people that bought these hardware wallets. Let's go find them. Just fake your information. That's what I did. And I paid with Monero. So there's no, it's less likely, even if there was a breach, what do they get? They're going to find a fake email with a fake phone number with a fucking, I just shipped it to like one of those CVS drop-off points, miles, like not even the same direction of me. And I picked it up. Like, I just show them the confirmation, and they're like, they don't really check. You got to be careful with the name kind of thing, but like they didn't really check. I just showed them the receipt. I was like, here's the receipt, here's the confirmation. They're like, cool, thanks. Ship it to your work. Who cares? You're like, ship it to a PO box, ship it to anywhere, and fake as much information. If you're going to ship it to your house, just don't put your real information. Shit, ship it to your neighbor. Pay him $10. Be like, hey, $10, this package might show up to your house, y'all. Or your that uncle, you know that uncle everyone has. Get creative with it. The warranty it comes with is all right. Now, Cupcake takes a different approach. They just made software. So Cupcake is an app in the Cake Wall family focused on making crypto security possible for everyone. No more waiting weeks for shipping and customs. I didn't really wait that long, by the way. I waited like 10 days. No more $200 costs. I get it. That is a selling point. No more terrifying data breaches. It's true. If you have an old phone laying around, Cupcake lets you turn it into a powerful hardware wallet with just a few taps. It works similarly to an air-gapped hardware wallet, separating the private keys from the main wallet app and becoming the dedicated signer. Cupcake contains the private keys for transaction signing, while Cake Wallet has only the view of the keys, the public keys, necessary to see your balance, historical transactions, and generate new transactions for couple key design. Easy to understand, but we're going to go kind of over it. So you definitely want to use Calyx OS or Graphene OS. Graphene OS, preferably. I would do that or a modern factory reset from an Apple phone. That's still getting software updates. Don't let perfection get in the way of. Yeah, but I would pick like a Pixel like 6, say like you had a 7A or an 8A and you upgraded for whatever reason, just use that. But make sure it's receiving updates. Avoid using a SIM. Pretty much just remove that. And that's it. Just make it it's becoming a brick. Configure your phone security, turn off like the camera, turn off biometrics, pretty much just put on like a pin. Make sure the device has encryption. Custom DNS provider if you want. Install an application, Cake Wallet. You can do the Tor gateway, keeping Cake Wallet update pretty much. And then set up your own node. After you set up your own node, where is it? This is going to be easy. So first, after you harden your phone, Graphene OS preferably, you're going to walk through or skip the initial onboarding help, choose your currency, which is going to be Monero, and select create a new wallet. Optionally, if you have an existing wallet and you want to restore Cake Wallet, you can do that with the restore, but we're going to start strong. So first, you're going to set a strong random PIN code or password that is not the thing to unlock your phone. This is why I say use Graphene OS. Graphene OS is a very interesting way that they set up their PIN. You can even scramble it, which is a little added, like, so people can't just guess it. This shouldn't really be with you in public anyways, but if you decide that you do want to bring this with you, this is an option. Choose a name for your wallet or hit the random button and securely save your seed phrase and verify you saved it. Write it down. Digitally, preferably not, unless it's an air-gapped PC. Now, this is how you link it. I had someone in my chat that was like very confused on how this works. Cupcake has no access to the internet. To properly see your transaction history, balances, and create and send new transactions, you'll need to pair it with Cake Wallet. You have to understand this. And I would go even a further step with your phone, especially Graphene OS, I would put on airplane mode permanently. I would install something. I would go to the network firewall that's built into Graphene OS and block everything. I would make sure that it is always not connected to the internet. As Cupcake has no access to the internet, to properly see your transactions and everything, to link with a Cake Wallet, open the menu and select Link to Cake Wallet. You'll use this QR code in the next step. This is done on the phone with no internet access, the Cupcake. From Cake Wallet, enter the wallet's screen and either the menu or the button on the bottom bar. Select Restore Wallet and then select Cupcake App. It has a little option. Scan the QR code shown in Cupcake. Name your wallet as desired and tap restore. That's it. And it connects, which is awesome. Once they're linked. Now, we're going to talk about spending. Support Cake Pay. Okay. So the easiest way to spin Monero with Cupcake, using the Cupcake wallet, you must use it in conjunction with the Cake wallet, as Cupcake functions as an offline signing app designed for enhanced security. The process involving creating a transaction in Cake wallet, which acts kind of like a watch-only wallet, online wallet, and then signing it offline using Cupcake. First, ensure your Cake wallet is synchronized, and then open Send Screen. Enter the recipient's address and the amount that you want to send. Instead of directly sending, you will generate the transaction needs to be signed. To do this, use Cake Wallet's send feature to create the transaction and then transfer the transaction data to Cupcake. This is typically done by scanning the QR code generated by Cupcake by Cake Wallet using the Cupcake app. Once the transaction data is loaded on a Cupcake, you can review it. Since Cupcake is designed to be offline, e.g. air-gapped, with no internet, it cannot automatically update its balance or verify transactions on the blockchain independently. Therefore, you must manually configure the transaction details with Cupcake and sign it using a private spend key, which remains securely stored offline. After signing Cupcake, it will generate a signed transaction that you can send back to Cake Wallet. In Cake Wallet, you will then broadcast the signing transaction to the Monero network to complete the transfer. It is important to note that Cupcake does not currently support sending funds directly from its interface, and yet may require you to restore or create your wallet each time it's closed, potentially leading to multiple wallet instances. For most accurate, up-to-date guidance, refer to the official Cupcake documentation, which is expected to be released shortly after development returns from Monerotopia. This is kind of like just like an overview. Remember, these are kind of done in... not the most polished part, because it's not a need. Most people want to do stuff immediately, and security and convenience don't go together, and that's kind of the problem. I would say avoid this. If you made it through it this far, avoid this. These things that they're trying to act like it's the Cupcake is... like this is like the way to do it, and they're acting like, oh, you're saving all this money, but you're losing in time. And I wish that the documentation is not really the best with Cupcake, whether with Blockstream Jade and Cold Cards and Keystone. They're very, very documented. Like, it's kind of too easy. And Trezor. I mean, Trezor is good too. I just don't like that Trezor's app ecosystem, and I had some problems with it. And I like my software free and open source as possible and not need a third-party app, even though Keystone has an app that they, and Blockstream Jade has an app. They both have apps that you can use, but they're not needed, kind of thing. So it's something to put into consideration. I think the $150 is worth it. You can buy it as anonymous as possible, and maybe if you rent, like you're replaced and you move, it's less likely that it could be traced back to you. That's kind of like the con. The real pros, I think the pros outweigh the cons. The pros are you have a securely air-gapped system that you own the keys and the crypto yourself. I don't think crypto is really going to go anywhere at this point in 2025. And I think it's important to own your digital sovereignty and own your financial freedom as much as possible financially. Especially, you should have the right to privacy and make private transactions. It should be not only a choice, it should be a right. So Monero gives us that right. What makes Monero different? What makes it private is Monero uses ring signatures, ring confidential transactions. FPC, there's an upgrade that's been testnetted, and it's supposed to increase the privacy of Monero like much more. I could probably do a whole episode on that alone, on how like the government and like federal agencies and these companies are getting these contracts trying to de-anonymize people. Most of the de-anonymizations are done through people not running their own node, which has been addressed. Run your own node. But essentially, ring signatures, ring confidentialities, ring signatures obscure the sender's identity by mixing their transactions input with multiple decoy inputs from the blockchain. So it's like kind of like taking a bunch of $20 bills and just throwing them in a hat and everyone picking it out. And they're like, which one's the real one? Where did this one come from? You're never going to find out. So the more ring signatures, the more they are, the better it gets. So I think the current standard is 16 decoys. So if there's 100 decoys, there's 1,000 decoys, it gets better. Stealth addressing generates a unique one-time public address for each transaction, preventing any linking between the recipient's permanent address. You can actually do sub-addresses too. This is what I do. I rotate. So the Keystone has like multiple sub-addresses. Block Jade has multiple sub-addresses. Cold Cards, Cake Wallet has multiple sub-addresses. All these have multiple sub-addresses. Use them. Make everything different. Make yourself unlinkable. Take your receive addresses and move your Monero around to other wallets. Who cares? If it's not large amounts, if it's large amounts, put it in a hardware wallet. Like, send it to the wallet's multiple sub-addresses so there's no linking, and then kind of secure your seed phrase, and that's it. And make sure you verify it's the seed phrase every couple months. Like, write it down, have it in like three backups of it in different formats. Preferably, you could do MDisk, again, encrypt it. You could do a flash drive and encrypt it. And then look into Superbacked. Superbacked is kind of awesome because it allows you to essentially have a more encrypted version of the seed phrases, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I digress. Back to my point, though, is that Monero's strength in the fact that it makes your payments private should be the reason you're using it, whether it's to hoard it and become maybe a Monero millionaire, or is it to actually, I look at it from a financial point, is to use it and spend it and have privacy in the digital world that doesn't need my credit card and my debit card and et cetera, et cetera. Monerica is a good website to check out that businesses accept Monero, and KYC.NotMe. KYC.NotMe is a good website to find companies and verified services that accept Monero. I mean, they're both really good resources. There's even a convention you can buy about Monero that you can buy with Monero. I think people don't realize how much use it actually has. It's very small compared to Bitcoin right now, but again, Bitcoin was kind of like very obscured. You could probably ask the average user and they kind of know what Bitcoin is. But if you ask them what Monero, I've met one person on the street and they're like, is that Monero? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, he's like, based. I'm like, all right, cool. But that's really about the gist of it. I don't want Monero to be hidden or private, or like, it's probably used very heavily in the on the online darknet, drug markets, etc. But the main important objective is not using these centralized exchanges that constantly want to know everything you're spending and doing, etc. Imagine if you took $10,000, and this is going to go into kind of a rant and a point. If you take $10,000 and you put it into your bank account, most banks will withhold their right to not let you release the funds to you to prevent fraud, meaning that you could go days, if not weeks, to receive money that you know is legit. Say you know it's legit. Say it's in the form of a check. You know the company is good. They can withhold the right to that. And they can report it to, you know, the IRS. They can even reject you cashing it and saying, don't know about it. If you pull out anything more than 10, I think it's like 10 grand, they can reject it, but it's your money. Monero just needs the confirmation. Your stuff is generally confirmed within one transaction. The one transaction, it's like, hey, this is actually there. It's being sent to you. And then you have to wait about 10 to 20 minutes, I believe, for it to be fully available. That's it. That prevents the fraud and the abuse. Because I don't know how to... It's there. It's a trust but verify kind of thing. That's the beautiful thing about Monero, is it helps prevent double spend attacks and fraud and abuse in a sense due to its public and private key cryptography and, you know, math. Stuff that's much smarter than my brain. So imagine taking $10,000 worth of Monero and you have a friend in another country. Western Union's going to charge you an arm and a leg to send that. And they might hold it for a couple days. They might hold it for a month. You have no control over it. You're sending it. Now it's there. It's in their possession. They're like, this might be a terrorist or something. So what do you do? And say it costs you like $1,000 to send it. Monero, it'll cost me like maybe like $2, a couple dollars. That's what you could do with, that's a great thing with Monero, is like you can send it to multiple addresses and maybe it costs you like $5. After you could send it to like that's a lot of money actually. It'd be way cheaper than that. Say it's cost you $5 to send like $1,000 around to a bunch of, just a different wallet to, because you just want to. And it's all connected to your node anyways, but that's the point. If I'm even, say, going to a country where they want to know how much money I'm bringing, I could just tell them $100. I've had that happen. I've been on TSA and they're like, how much money do you have in your wallet? I'm like, $200. Is that enough to get home? Yeah, I got my ticket. Where's your return ticket? I'm like, okay, right here. I'm like, why does it matter how much money I have? I might have just enough for food. I might have spent all my money on the plane check. I might get my check while I'm on vacation. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. It's crazy. But the cool thing is, I can put my Monero on this drive, on these hardware wallets, and just put it in my bag. Hop on a plane. Oh, it's just a phone. Oh, it's just a tablet. It's to play games. It's a gaming device. Blah, blah, blah. And there could be like $20,000 on there. And I can go to places and spend it. And it's lighter than cash. It's lighter than gold. And it appreciates. And I have the ability to essentially spend money privately. That's the point. I mean, there's Porkfest in the United States. They accept Monero. Like, they're huge on it. I think there are some Bitcoin maxis there too, but, you know, whatever. I think that also it's important to be able to buy stuff with it. Like, I bought my email provider with it. I buy VPNs with it. I pay for this podcast with it. So it has store value. And it's super awesome. Now, the cool thing is, and people are like saying buy the dip, you know, with Monero because its price is going all over the place. But there is also something really cool. I'm trying to find what it's called. Not RetroSwap. RetroSwap is cool. If you want FCMP transactions, plus is what it's called. That is kind of like, again, it's that's kind of like going to be the major privacy upgrade of Monero. Again, I could just do like a whole thing about it, but I think it's super, super important to kind of understate. Though, Cupcake is getting kind of nice. And that's kind of like I'm just looking at the Monero subreddit. Yikes. But you can do pretty much create a transaction on Cake Wallet. So I'm reading because like their website's just not updated. But create a transaction on Cake Wallet, transfer to Cupcake's VR code, sign offline, transaction back to VR code broadcast. It's 5 steps, 5 minutes, 0 cost. So just keep that in mind. But there's a lot of Monero pretty much love and enjoyment. And you know what? If you have, people do bring up, like, if you would have bought Monero, like, I think. Oh, no, not that music. If you would have bought Monero, I think, like, 10 years ago, if you would have invested, like, $3,000, you'd have about 300K. Think about that. I don't really go on the Monero, like, price. I think it's nice when its price is high. Don't get me wrong. But I definitely am more of a Monero, technology enjoyer. That's kind of like my point is like the technology of Monero is like the best, not really I don't really care as much. I mean, I don't want the price to go to zero, but I'm more of on the tech side of it. I like the thing it does. Oh yeah. And then, like, you can just use the, you can pretty much, you have so many options now, but I would say your best option would be the Keystone, Jade. I think Jade supports only Bitcoin, but, and crypto coin cards, but if you're going to have any cryptocurrency that's not Monero, just do a hardware wallet, do a cold wallet, do yourself a favor, and it, make sure you pick open source. That's just kind of how I view it. We're going to talk about some quick Graphene OS security preview update, which is kind of based if you've made it this far down. Lots of news. I know I just went on a Monero rant, but that's how I'm going to enter into back into the space, baby. Graphene OS has something called the security preview release. I just made a video about it. If you decide that you want to go watch that, please do watch it to the full end and hit the like, the sub, share it with your friends. Pretty much, Graphene Security preview release provides early access to Android security bulletin patches prior to the official disclosure. They pretty much have an embargo right now. The current security preview release provided the current version of November 2025 and December 2025 as well on Android open source project. They recommend enabling this, but it's not on by default. You can choose to. The only difference between our regular releases and security preview releases are the future Android security bulletin patches being applied with any conflicts resolved. The downside of the security preview release is we cannot provide the source of the patches until the official disclosure date. So essentially, if you're a free and open source massive advocate, which I am, I would say enable this. But if that is a conflict of interest with you, disregard it. I think as long as they are open source and they will be released, I'm okay with it. I love open source, but I love security and I like testing stuff. This is on the testing side and it's testing on the security side. Maybe this will end in the future and they'll be able to release this as soon as possible. It seems like they're the only Android vendors that are doing this. You can pretty much enable the security preview release settings via settings, system update, receive security preview release. Our plan is to keep it off by default with a new page added to the setup wizard, which will have it toggled on as a recommendation. We'll prompt users on existing installs to choose. I think that's good. Graphene OS gives me one thing that I love more than anything, choice. I have the choice to do this. So pretty much the new security update Android is using to provide around 3 months of early access to OEMs with the permission to make binary-only releases from the beginning. As far as we know, Graphene OS is the first to take advantage of this and ship the patches early. Even stock Pixel OS is not doing this. essentially, they are getting this security patches from November and next year, I believe. They're getting, however, you can see, they're getting a security bulletin from December 2025 patches, and November 2025 patches. With 54 high severity patches, this is a full subset. It's pretty awesome and very incredible. If the embargo ends soon, they'll be able to pretty much see the patches and release the source code effectively much easier. That'd be awesome. That's kind of what the early security patches is generally done. Pixel 10 is still too early to ask when it will be supported. This is back in August. They might have it now. Brains, a little bit. I think people need to be patient. With the Pixel 10, I think they've gotten it figured out. I essentially have been okay with how Graphene OS has been performing. I've had no issues. Using RCS with Google Messages on Graphene OS, that is now option. RCS seems the way to go. It's going to be new. So that's something to think about. You can now use Google RCS, which is kind of like a step above. RCS is kind of a step above SMS. It's slightly more secure. And it seems like it might be a little bit better option than SMS, but Signal should be your complete option. You should ditch SMS if you can. The only thing that I actually kind of had a problem with is some apps have been crashing, but again, I'm an alpha, so I'm gonna leave that reserved as much as possible. But other than that, I've had no issue with Graphene OS on the newest updates. I'm just trying to be as transparent as possible. I am getting a new laptop soon. That supports Core Boot as well, so I'll be able to write and do more content like this. I'm eventually going to figure out how I can do this mobily. I would like to do this mobile because I want to see how good it's going to be on Cubes OS. You know, it's going to be some pretty much like the updates in a sense, and the Graphene OS update as well. Last is going to be the news, and it's going to be kind of insane. So pretty much from October 7th from the EFF, this is something to think about on this capital surveillance. I'm going to kind of like do this as an end segment. I'm going to just find some dystopian shit for you guys to think about, find and read. Maybe it's a couple weeks old. Maybe it's whatever. I'm going to end every segment with some dystopian news. We'll call it the dystopian end segment. So pretty much, Flock Safety and Texas Sheriff claimed a license plate search was for a missing person. It was an abortion investigation. New documents and court records obtained by the EFF show that Texas deputies queried Flock Safety surveillance data in an abortion investigation, contradicting the narrative promoted that the company and the Johnson County Sheriff that she was being searched for a missing person and that it was about her safety, both kind of like abortion coded. Where's the missing person? Gown. The new information shows deputies had initiated a death investigation, heavy quotes, of a non-viable fetus, logged evidence of a woman's self-managed abortion, and consulted prospects about possibly charging her. Johnson County Sheriff King repeatedly denied the automated license plate reader, ALPR, search was related to enforcing Texas abortion ban, another shithole, by the way, And Flock safety called media accounts false, misleading, and clickbait. However, according to a sworn affidavit by the lead detective, the case was in fact a death investigation response to a reported abortion. Deputies collected documentation of the abortion from the reported person, her alleged romantic partner. The death investigation remained open for weeks, with detectives interviewing the woman and reviewing text messages about the abortion. Some other stuff that they say in it. Pretty much the incident was... The incident answer was he had to process the event called the family attorney. Detective Miller was provided a FedEx packaging pill that was sent in photographed what believed to be a fetus and the instructions how to take the medication. It was discussed with the same with the district attorney's office and learned that the state could not statutory charge blank for taking a pill to cause the abortion or miscarriage of non-viral fetus. Pretty much that is in documentation. The records include previously unreported details about the case that shocked public officials and reported justice advocates across the country when it was first reported for media in May. The case served as a clear warning sign that when data from ALPRs are shared across the state lines, it can put people at risk, including abortion seekers, and in this case may have run an afoul of laws in Washington and Illinois. False narrative. The sheriff has since been arrested. Ooh. Interesting. So, as Flock wrote of EFF's previous commentary on this case, bold in an original statement, earlier this month there was a purposely misleading report that Texas police officer with Johnson County Sheriff's Office used LPR to, which is Flock's dog shit, by the way, to target people seeking reproductive health care. This organization is actively perpetrating narratives that have been proven false, even the record has shown them corrected, because they're a bunch of bitches. According to Sheriff Johnson himself, this claim is unequivocally false. Lots of false statements in this bitch. No charges were ever filed against the woman. She was never under criminal investigation by Johnson County. She was being searched as a missing person, not as a suspect of a crime. That sheriff has since been arrested and indicted on felony counts of unrelated sexual harassment and whistleblower-related cases. Retaliation case. He's also been charged with aggravated perjury for allegedly lying to a grand jury. The EFF filed a public request on Johnson County to obtain more detective kind of events. So, yeah, remember, always do FOIA requests if you can. Fuck these people. Newly released evidence reports the affidavit unequivocally described the case as a death investigation of a non-viable fetus. These documents also undermine the claim that the ALPR search was in response to a medical emergency, since, in fact, the abortion has occurred more than 2 weeks before deputies were called to investigate. The investigator's sworn account, and it goes much deeper in that. So pretty much, after I read this, in the report, in the segment claims that the officer's ground asked him to start looking up the woman due to there being a large amount of blood found on their residence. So much will claim the conflict. As affidavit, the segment repeatedly expressed that the situation was not making sense. He claims that he was worried that the partner had hurt the woman and her children, so to check on their welfare, huge quotes, he used TransUnion's TL commercial investigation database to look up her address. Once he identifies the vehicle, he ran the plate through the Flock database, returning hits in Dallas, which is, think about that one. Collecting the records. Since 404 Media first reported on this case, King has perpetrated the false narrative, telling reporters that woman was never under investigation, that officers has not consented to charges against her, and that it was all about her safety. Just think about that. They used a fucking database for the law enforcement database to just search up their license plate, and they found them that quick. Flock shouldn't even be fucking legal. I don't care how much safer society is. If the more restrictions of your freedoms, if more freedoms are being restricted and more thoughts are being shoved into your head and you're speaking less, you are losing your freedoms and we are not becoming a better society or a better country. And essentially, nothing came of it. Pretty much the searches in this case may have violated laws in states like Washington and Illinois where restrictions exist specifically to prevent this kind of surveillance and overreach, but those protections mean nothing when Texas deputy can access cameras to these states with a few keystrokes, by the way, without external review, that search is legal and legitimate under local law. In this case, external agencies should have seen the word abortion and questioned the search. But the next time an officer is investigating such a case, they may use more vague or misleading terms to justify the search. In fact, it's possibly already happened. ALPRs were marketed to the public tool to find stolen cars and locate missing people. Instead, they've become a dragnet that allows law enforcement to track anyone anywhere for any reason, including investigating people's healthcare decisions. This makes neither companies profiting from this technology nor the agencies deploying. They can be trusted to tell the full story about how it's being pretty much talked about. It's no unchecked surveillance. Any type of surveillance is not good, but unchecked surveillance. So I definitely would say read this entire report. It's actually mind-bogglingly crazy. Lots of information, lots of sources, and it will make you realize that these fucking insane people that want these in our society, just want to pretty much track you as much as possible. Do yourself a favor, get a hardware wallet, buy Monero, and tell Flock to go fuck itself. I'll see you guys in the next one.